Is that harder or easier than you thought? What did you learn? Practice more, okay. Did it get easier as you went through it? Did you learn something from the other people that you could probably bring into yours? Good. What was the hardest thing about it? The nervousness, or to be natural? Okay. What was the funnest thing about it? What's that? It didn't matter. You didn't lose any money. So trust. Any questions about trust? Hard to gain and easy to lose. Do you trust the media? No. Should you? Let me show you this clip about, this was actually on the Today Show, actually. Where is it?
First, the severe flooding here in the Northeast as more rain continues to fall today. NBC's Michelle Kaczynski, I guess she's in the canoe, is in Wayne, New Jersey this morning.
Hey,
Michelle, good morning to you.
Good morning. Well, obviously we're getting a nice break from the rain, but not the flooding. This is essentially now a part of the Passaic River in this neighborhood. It rushed in yesterday through the streets. And it's really tough to control a canoe or a boat when you're out in it. It's much deeper back there because this is really moving. And as it started to get into people's homes, they started realizing it's time to get out of here. And in some areas today, more people are expected to leave as river levels crest. Okay, after so many days of this, though, it's getting harder for people to take it in stride. In fact, in New Hampshire, the governor said in his state alone, the amount of damage is now in the tens of thousands of dollars. Katie?
Actually, Michelle, I'll take it. Is there some kind of severe drop-off there between the foreground? We'll go back. We saw these guys a second ago, Michelle, walking. Are these holy men walking on top of water? What's going on here?
Why walk when you can ride, you guys? When you have a ride like this, why would you want to walk?
Do you run ashore yet?
They wouldn't let me go back into the deep water because they were afraid I would just drift out of here. You know, down at the intersections where it's running through, the current is really swift. It's a little scary, and walking through yesterday when it was up to your waist,
right.
It almost felt like it was going to take you away.
Strange piece of video there, Michelle.
Is your oar hitting ground, Michelle?
Of course not.
Okay. All right, Michelle.
It's as smooth as
soap. Michelle, thank you very much. That's Michelle Kaczynski in New Jersey for us this morning.
That's late.
Any credibility issues there? Students send me these. I have to show them to you. Any questions on trust? We're feeling good about success blueprint and trust. Any questions on that? Comments? Are we ready for negotiation? Going deep. What's the difference between negotiation and persuasion? We are now moving towards the end. Go down to page 54, and it's the next page, even though it starts number one. It's the PowerPoint slides. So when you think about negotiation, what runs through your brain when you're getting ready for negotiation? What's that? Okay, what else? Strategy? Compromise? You ready for a fight? Win-win? What is win-win? There's an interesting thing. I don't think we could define win. Define it for what is win-win? Okay, now I do want to point out, win-win is not equal. A lot of people make that mistake. Oh, let's just divide it down the middle. Now, if it's your home, you might not need to do it. Even if you only got 5% of it, could that still be a win-win? Sure. A lot of people make win-win is not down the middle. And it's not about who's winning or proving your worth. A lot of people go into negotiation trying to prove their worth, trying to go to make it win. So more like Frisbee. Who's winning? See what? Not really winning. They're doing it together, and that's where negotiation comes in. So we'll be doing actual negotiation exercise. It'll get progressively harder as we go through this to help you understand. Now, the way this works on your slides here, you can see there's a smiley face on there. You see the smiley face down towards the right? That means you have a copy of it in your material. So you won't have to do, I like getting right things down because you do tend to remember more as we talked about it. Now, negotiation, having the right skills can make you an extra $10,000 a minute. Is that true? In a minute? $20,000 during the persuasive process? How many of you have persuaded or negotiated? Was it a good experience? Some good, some bad? Was the other side, did the other side play any dirty tricks? They did, didn't they? A lot of old school negotiators out there. So tomorrow we're actually going to be talking about the dirty deeds. The mean, evil, vindictive, manipulative things the other side will do. Now, I'm not teaching you these dirty deeds so you can use them. I'm teaching you so you can be aware. There's a lot of old school negotiators teaching very manipulative tactics to get to the victory. You want to beat them. You have to win at all costs. Isn't that the mentality for a lot of people in negotiation? And we need to get past that. So, anybody know who Chester Karas is? He does some negotiating courses. He says in business, you don't get what you deserve, you get what you negotiate. And don't we negotiate every day? Where we eat, what we do. Does a baby negotiate when they're crying? Kind of. So let's talk about this. So negotiation's a discussion to reach agreement or get past an obstacle. And we don't want to talk about bargaining. Most people, as we monitor negotiation, what they're doing is bargaining. All they do is fight over price. Is price always the only issue? Is it always the main issue? No, but that's what everyone fights. They bargain. And it's funny, you monitor two people. One person comes in that's old school. All right, I'll give you $200,000. And the person says, well, let's talk about it. Maybe I can get you more. $195,000, that's my final offer. Well, what are you looking for? I can probably do better than that. $190,000, that's it. Take it or leave it. Isn't that how it goes sometimes? The person just didn't listen. They didn't understand the whole process. They were bargaining. So negotiation is not win-lose. It's not lose-lose. It's not win-destroy. We're looking for mutual agreement. Most people out there trying to prove their worth with the negotiation. So the message, of course, is persuade first, negotiate second. So both sides should be reasonable, willing, and open. Very important. Have you ever tried to negotiate with someone and they just didn't want to do, just weren't willing? Is a negotiation we talked about very emotional? Because the solution's pretty simple. When someone gets a divorce, logically it's pretty simple how it should be, isn't it? Well, what happened? The emotions get kicked in. Has anybody worked with a negotiation trying to get a property, but one spouse says, I don't care, let's just lose it? Let me see, has that happened? Quite a few of you. They would rather lose $50,000 in equity than see that blankety-blank get any piece of it. Or the Middle East. A lot of the challenges there are very, logically very easy to solve, but the challenge is what? They're managed hundreds of years of emotions, of indoctrination, all these things happening, and it's not as easy, and that's true with any type of negotiation, getting the emotions involved. Almost 75% of the negotiation, we talk about emotion. So what are some of the bad experiences you've had with negotiation? Do you have any bad, good experience? I mean, what are you running into out there? Is it mostly with the homeowners that you're negotiating, or is this with actual bankers? A little bit of both. What's been the hardest thing so far? Homeowners? Do they think that you're trying to take advantage of them? Okay, that's part of it. Learning the games that they play and being prepared, sure. You're emotionally attached. They can't believe you. You're trying to take advantage of them. And that's important, too, when you ask them. What we do is we try to find a standard. It's important when you're in negotiation. Where you say, well, according to my numbers, this is worth $150,000, it's $200,000. They say, no, it's worth $200,000. And what do you ask them? Well, how did you get that number? And they say, well, I just know. You had that happen? Pulling the number out of the air? But you have to have those concrete numbers, as we'll talk about with the world of negotiation. So what I want to do, as we talk about this, I want to do a quick, is Steve out there? There he is. See, he's on the back. Bring Steve up. We're going to do a quick negotiation, quick auction here. Anybody want to win 20 bucks? What is it, 20 bucks? Is it 100 bucks? What are you giving away? 1,000 bucks? All right, we're going to do a little auction here and see how well you do. All right, you see how that happens? Just all of a sudden, the emotions get involved. And so the more prepared you are, the more the emotions stay out. Preparation is the key. As we trained at MIT and Harvard doing different negotiation things, one of the biggest obstacles to persuasion and negotiation as they start doing five-country negotiations, even basic negotiations, is people didn't prepare. They just were trying to show up to see what would happen. The prepared person's going to win because that takes the emotions out of it. And those emotions start flaring. Not looking for the win-win strings, things need to happen. So what I want to do is we're going to do our very first negotiation exercise. Now, this is not a time for, again, this is actually very important. It's not a race to get a solution. A lot of people want to be the fastest ones done, but it doesn't mean you have the best deal. Your job is to, whether it be do real estate transactions and other transactions, your job is to get the best that you can do. And the challenge is, a lot of times, you think it's a really good deal until what? You hear what somebody else got. So you have to understand with negotiations, another thing that's very, very important is how they feel. If someone says, I'll give you $250,000 for the house, let's say, I'll take it. What's going to happen? They're going to have remorse. Even though it's a great deal for both parties, what happened? Too quickly. Now they're thinking what? Wait a minute. Maybe I should have. You know how we play that game? And so even if it's an acceptable deal, we're finding out through the research is that you still need to fight for it a little bit. You still need to negotiate, even though it's acceptable. Different terms. We negotiate every day. Even when you go into a suit store, are things negotiable? Is everything negotiable? Whether you're buying a car, buying a suit, or getting a free tie, there's negotiations involved. So I want to give you the first exercise. You'll need to divide up in groups of two, and you have to negotiate with somebody you didn't come with and somebody you don't know, because we want to see the different dynamics, the different personalities, and how we negotiate. Now, the main thing about this, it's not time to make up things. We were doing a real estate negotiation, and they were fighting over a parcel of land between the two properties, and one person says, well, they're going to dump radiation there. Okay. Had nothing to do with the exercise, but it skews the result. So you can be creative within the information that you're given. And some of these, we're going to do some real-life Harvard negotiations tomorrow. This is just a kind of an easier one to kick off things to really get you in the mind of negotiation. So what I want you to do is stand up and choose somebody that you don't know. This is a two-person negotiation, and we're going to read it over. So stand up. There you go. Thank you. Stand up. Point to the person that you'll negotiate with. One of you will be Dr. Brewster, and one of you will be Dr. Ronowski. Make sure we hand these out. And then I'll give you 5 minutes to read it over, mark it up. Okay, very important, you don't let the other side see your paper. Keep the paper confidential, but take 5 minutes to read it over. So when you have your partner, raise your hand. If you don't have a partner, raise your hand so we can get you together. Who does not have a partner? Here's somebody right here. Right here needs a partner. You still need a partner? Here's it right here. Does everyone have a partner? All right, find two seats together. Take 5 minutes to read them over. Mark it up. And then we're going to negotiate. All right, come back to your seats. No hard feelings. Let's talk about this. How many of you did not reach an agreement? Raise your hand. Okay, half of you didn't reach an agreement. Now, come back in. What happens when you're backed into a corner, you have nothing left to do? What did you catch yourself doing? Digging in and making things up. I heard people that had to talk to the embassy. Some people were going to go down and steal them. I guess that's creative, but that's not within the thing. Yeah. It's hard. You both wanted the same things, what it would look like. You got a few people taking the money and running, right? Oh, did you hear that? If you would have read the thing, one side needed the inside of the banana, the other side needed the peel. Hello? That's why we do this one first. You're digging in your heels, you're getting mad, you're trying to save tuberlubrosis and all this other stuff. You're getting in there, how dare they, you're getting mad, you're making things up. And all you had to do was ask a few questions. All you had to do was get to be a little prepared. Does that make sense? It was so easy, and 90% of you just went whoop and missed it. Because you put your game faces on, you put your gloves on, and you're ready to negotiate without really understanding and asking questions. Because when you went to negotiate, it was all about you and you winning, wasn't it? you forgot to ask the other side what they were looking for and what they really wanted. Part of that was reading it and having all the information up front, and part of that was asking questions. So tell me, what were some of your aha's as you went through this? What were some of the creative deals that you came up with when you didn't see the bananas? Yeah. All right, so you were just pulling things out of the air, backed into a corner, letting them know that if she doesn't come through, that your cousin Guido will be paying her a visit. Okay, all right, sure. Okay, when both sides are honest, yeah, that rarely happens because most people have been taught the negotiation, how they hold the cards. Well, what do you want? No, what do you want? I asked you first. Now it turns out to be. And so you later, it is much easier that way. And everyone's afraid to make the first offer. Is it okay to make the first offer? Sometimes it is. We'll talk about the numbers tomorrow. Yeah. Yeah, you got to be careful there. Assume that the price is the issue. Or assume that the down payment's the issue. A lot of times it's not. Well, let me ask you this. As you were starting to come to an impasse, you realized that both sides needed the bananas. You didn't figure out the solution. What were some of the feelings you were having inside? You frustrated? Okay, so that would be the price. You're fighting over the price instead of, are there alternatives? Because both sides have the most important issues. Isn't that how you felt? It was your side, it was your company, it was more important. There isn't. Yours is the most important. And our next exercise is going to be a three-party exercise. And some people will want to split it down the middle and be altruistic, but that's really not how the real world works. Your job with your company is to maximize your profits. Tuberlubarosis. Well, I want you to get in your brain before you go to integration, just remember blue banana. Just remember it, because sometimes it's so easy, we just look right past it. We put our game faces on, we get aggressive, we want to win. Our side is the most important side, and we completely miss it. That's why we do this one first. Why we do this one first, because one of the most important things you can take from this weekend is to realize it can be that easy. A lot of times we just completely miss what's happening. Okay, continue on. So those feelings of conflict, did you have any feelings of conflict? I guess you'll have to raise your hand. I saw feelings of conflict. I saw people getting tense and uneasy. I saw people getting, well, I won't say unenlightened, that's a word, but we get stressed. Conflict, a lot of times when we don't have enough information, we don't have enough tools, there's a smiley face, that means you have this one. It triggers stress, frustration, and anger. And that's when you started pulling things out of the air, making things up, trying to find the solution. And that makes a big difference. So how do people respond to conflict? Some people will avoid you. Will they lie to you to your face? Try to get rid of you? Does conflict for some people is so uncomfortable to do anything to avoid it? Isn't that true? Some will change the subject. Some will admit that they're wrong and not mean it. Some will pretend to agree. They might whine and complain. They might play the martyr. Why me? It's not fair. You're taking advantage of me. We all respond differently to conflict. One thing I want you to write in your notes that's really important. Apology is cheap. What do I mean by that? Apologies are cheap. When you get in conflict situation, what do I mean by that? No, I'm not asking later. Jasper, no, you just say, oh, I'm sorry. How easy is that? You get all your emotions of, I'm sorry, that was not my intent. I'm sorry you felt angry. I didn't, just say you're sorry. Is that pretty easy? One of the best things that you can have. Oh, I'm sorry, that was not my intent. I didn't mean for you to get angry. I'm sorry that the offer upset you. That wasn't my intent. Just apologies. Apologies are really cheap and go really, really far. Let's talk about the attack cycle. They blame you. How could you not care about the people of Las Vegas? That is so, oh. And then they defend themselves. And then they attack. Isn't that true? Is that kind of what happened? Defend, blame, attack is kind of the cycle that you're looking at. Did you see that happening when you were negotiating? How could they not care? What about this? And then you try to defend yourself, and the other side gets mad because you're making them look bad. How could they not care about tuberlubarosis? And then the defend, and it kept getting stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger. It's called the attack cycle. The finger pointing. Is it true that somebody can transfer their emotions to you? Is it anger? What happens with anger? Go home. Who gets the brunt of it when you've had a bad day? The cat? The dog? Even with my children, I can still say, oh, you're transferring. And they realize, because when we're angry sometimes, you just want to go after somebody. And people will transfer those things. You have to be very careful. Very, very careful. And this is important. It's a Chinese saying. If the man that strikes first admits his ideas have given out. Isn't that interesting? The person that gets angry first, the one that gets mad first, the one that attacks you personally first, the one that starts making things up or starts lying first, admits his ideas again, doesn't know what to do next. Doesn't know what to do next. It's not a zero-sum game. And you've probably all seen that exercise where people arm wrestle. Have you ever seen that done? Where you get $1 for every time you win? You seen that before? It's amazing. I've seen a lot of negotiations will bring you up to have two people up. I saw this big, they had the whole audience, this big man and this little petite woman got together, and he's like, ha, 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 ha. And so every time you win, you get $1. And he's like, bam, bam. And it was hurting her hand. He was just going after it. And you see the other people just fighting and fighting and fighting. But when you think it through, what's the real solution? Everyone makes a lot more money instead of sitting there fighting. Does that make sense? And that's what people tend to do. They just want to fight. They want to win. Mindset's completely different. So if my goal is to be a failure, if I reach my goal, I'll feel successful. If I don't reach my goal, I'll feel successful too. And that's not what we're looking for. We want to talk about preparation. Well, we were going to take a break. Did we need a break? Want to take a quick 5-minute break? Okay. Oh, you got to warn me. I'll just keep going. You wind me up, I don't stop until the end of the day. So let's take a quick 5-minute break. And we'll come back and finish up negotiation. So one of the big things, I told you mentioned earlier about Harvard, MIT, and the studies that have been going on, is preparation's a huge thing. And we just tend to want to get in there and negotiate and just see what the other side says. The side that's prepared the most is usually the side that gets the best deal, that has the most information. You put yourself in their shoes. Why are they selling their home? Why do they care? What's changing? So basically, you're looking at your needs. What do you need? And then what do they need? We would have asked that during the Blue Banana. We would have different results. What do they really need? Why are they selling their home? Why is their home going in foreclosure? What is the solution? What are the different options? Creating different alternatives. Your goal is to make the pie bigger. That is your goal as a negotiator. How can you make the pie bigger? What do I mean by that? How can you make the pie bigger? Yeah, enough for everyone. You can expand the pie. Is that possible? How can you expand the pie in a real estate deal? How can you make the pie bigger, make the pie better? Yeah. Sure. What could you add? Husband TV, a paint, insurance, a lot of different things. Not just the price. Price is rarely the issue. There's other things we can. It could be a car. It could be living in your apartment, one of your apartments, till this gets taken care of. There's a lot of different options. Looking at being creative, getting past the money. And of course, a mental rehearsal. What if they see this? How am I going to react? What am I going to do if they attack me personally? What are they going to do if they make fun of my mom? What if they start screaming and crying? All these things happen. You're kind of looking at me strange. It's amazing what will happen out there in the world of negotiation. They might break down and cry. They might throw things at you. They might get angry. They might use profanity. All these things come into play. The more you can prepare mentally, the more successful you're going to be. So your goal, and you have a copy of this, is your range of acceptance, your win. Before you go to any negotiation, you need to go to that negotiation with three numbers. First one is what you want. What is the best case scenario? I want to buy this home or sell this home for $200,000. That is best case scenario. I can prove it. That's what it's worth. Then what do you intend? Well, realistically, I'd take 190 for it. And what do you need? Worst case scenario, I'm not selling it for less than $180,000. And you need to have those three numbers. Because is the first number you mention going to dictate the whole negotiation? Now, there's this area called the insult zone. Could you possibly have a number that insults them, that is way off? Now, that's one of the dirty deeds that people use, but this number, you have to have some reason to verify this number. How did you get $200,000? If you're going to offer $200,000 for a home, how did you get that number? You have to have what we call a standard that we'll be talking about. What you want, what you intend, and what you need. So let's say you had a company car, you were just fired from a job, you have bad credits, you can't get a new car, and a new place is hiring you, so you need to work out a company car. But nobody in that company has a company car. So you're going to this negotiation, they want to hire you, so what do you want? What would be the best thing you could have from this company? What would be the best case scenario? So you want a car? Or maybe even a helicopter? Isn't that how you've made it in New York when you take the elevator down to work? Does that mean you've made it? It could be that, or maybe they could buy you a car. What do you really intend? Well, if you ask for the helicopter, maybe you'll get the company car. That'd be best case scenario for them to get you the car. But if that doesn't happen, worst case scenario, what do you need? What's that? Transportation. Maybe it's a carpool service, or maybe it's a taxi or something, but you've gone through these different. What's the worst case scenario? What's that you could go with, and what's the best case scenario? Helicopter to work would be a great thing. Be a great thing. So this is so important for you to understand. What is your range of acceptance? What are the three numbers before you go into negotiation? Before those blue banana emotions come, you need to know these numbers. Your range of acceptance, what you want, what you intend, and what you need. Okay. So that's our goal, is to find the standard. This is what we've talked about. When you offer them $200,000 from the home, where did you get that number? What is your standard? Is it the market value? How do you come up with your standard number? Do you have a formula? Is it more persuasive to offer $100,000 for a home or $102,463.12? What is more likely to be accepted? They're around the same number. Exact numbers are more persuasive than rounded numbers. Write that down. Dramatically so. Why do you think that is? What's that? Easy to remember. Why else? Yeah. Yeah, you didn't pull it out of the air. There's some reason that you've come up with this number. You mean, what is your standard? How did you come up with that number? Is it an expert opinion? Is there an evaluation there? Was it a custom that people normally use in real estate or business evaluation? Sure. Curvy numbers. Now, curvy numbers, that a lot of people talk about curvy numbers, but here's kind of, and that's interesting. We know that $9.99 is what? $10. But it's when it's $9.99, guess what? It sells more. It's just one of those psychological triggers. Now, a shift that's happened, it used to be that ended at 9 used to be what they say. Now it has shifted. Actually, the number that pulls up, let me put it this way. Odd numbers outpull even numbers, and the number 7 outpulls everything else. Which it used to be 9, but I think it's been overused. So when it ends in a 7, people are more likely to buy it than it ends with any other number. Don't ask me why, I just believe it. We can go into scientific studies then, but that's just what it's showing, the number 7. Is it the law? Is it a precedent? Is it a professional standard? What is the standard? A 16-year-old was told that he had to be home on the weekend at 10 o'clock. And he didn't feel that was fair. So, went to talk to his father about it, and guess what? 16-year-old, did they think it through? Do you persuade teenagers and kids differently than adults? What is the difference? Yeah, there's a power there. Well, part of it too is that the way that when the brain matures, it matures from the back to the front. And what's in the front? Our frontal lobe, which is fully matured about what age? About 22 to 25. So your brain is not mature until 22 to 25, and your frontal lobe is responsible for what? What's that? Rational thought, future forecasting. If I get a tattoo on my neck, could this affect my whole life? If I play Nintendo for 5 hours, could this affect my grade? It just doesn't register. Is that what you're going to say? And that's what happens. That's what the frontal lobe does. My children know. I say, frontal lobe. And they know exactly what I'm talking about. And it works very, very well. And so you can tell your children that they can't make any decisions until they're 25 and see how well that works. But the difference is, teenagers and children, it's all about the now. The consequences have to be now. The consequences tomorrow or next week don't matter because their frontal lobe is a different process of thinking. And that's understanding the emotions when you find the standard on how things work. Now, one thing I did want to point out is we were talking about the 16-year-old. So 10 o'clock, is that fair? Doesn't matter what the dad. So what he did is he went to, did a spreadsheet, went to his 15 friends, found out what their curfew was in a spreadsheet, found the average time, had the parents sign it, and brought that to the father. The average was 11:30, he was at 10, here are the signatures, here are the averages. That's a standard. Now that's much different than what? It's not fair, fighting about it, getting the emotions. So the teenager's mad, what happens to the father? Anyway, the father's mad, there's a power play going on. Why? Because I'm the dad. Does that help things? It goes back and forth, it escalates, and they don't talk to each other for 2 weeks. Versus having the standard. How did you come up with that price? So you have to be careful with the insult zone. Now could you have a good price, a standard price, and it still insults them? Sure, but that's why you need to understand, well, this is how I got the number. And that goes a long way, having that standard. And I mentioned earlier, if they're pulling a number out of the air, well, it's $300,000, and you say, where did you get that number? And they say, I just know. Because, well, I've lived here for 30 years, I know. And that tells you what? They have no clue. But there's a lot of emotions involved that we need to kind of to peel away. Some negotiation blunders that we do see. Disrespect, whether you mean it or not, that's how you're coming across. You have a copy of this, right? Am I right on it? It should be okay. It's just a couple slides. Conflicting style. What do I mean by that? What's that? It could be the senses, different personalities. It could be the visual, auditory, kinesthetic language. That's part of it. Part of it, too, is the amiable. You see an amiable person negotiating with an analytical person? Wow. Do strange things happen? We'll talk about that tomorrow, different personality styles and how to deal with those. A lot of that's a conflicting self. Sometimes if it's so extreme, you have to walk. Is it okay to let somebody else negotiate for you? If it's a good deal? Sometimes it is. Poor agenda, you're just winging it, going through the motions. You really don't know what you're trying to solve. You're just sitting down. Revealing too much information too fast. When you just kind of slowly reveal the information a little bit at a time, people are more successful than a data dump. You don't want a data dump. Emotionally involved, we've talked about the desire to destroy. And you felt some of those feelings during the blue banana. And sometimes it's just part of what we do, and we have to be careful there, and perceived cockiness. And that's very important when you're dealing with a homeowner who hasn't negotiated much. In fact, where should you negotiate? Where do they tell you to negotiate with the homeowner? Where? Kitchen table. Why? Comfort zone. That's just one of the easiest possible. They think you're already trying to take advantage of them. And they think that... And the worst thing you can say is, oh, I'm a great negotiator. Okay, let's get started. What's going to happen? Yeah, the wall's going to go up. So here's the big piece I really want you to take home before we do this next exercise. There's the position versus the problem. What was your position in the blue banana? Tuberlubrosis and what else? The bombs, right? That was your position. Your position was you needed the bananas and there was just no negotiating. What was the real problem? Wasn't it? The real problem is one side just needed the skins versus the juice. But we always fight over the position, concern versus the issue. Let me just kind of explain how this works. Somebody told, and it's actually happened in Vegas, somebody called our coach on call, they were getting ready to negotiate, and they were trying to get this house here in Vegas, it was around $300,000. And the person that he found out had told his family, his neighbors, he was going to get $300,000 for the home. Any ego involved here? This was a man. He told everyone he was going to sell it for $300,000. So everybody that came there would offer about $280,000. It was worth about $280,000, $285,000, $300,000, $300,000. That is the position. Well, what's the real problem? Some ego, and they started asking questions. He also found out he needed $300,000 to get into the new home that he was building. So everyone's trying to fight over the price, but the real issue, he needs the money to go through. So what did he do? Well, we talked and found out that he had a boat and a couple jet skis in the backyard. So finding out the real need that he needed $300,000, there was an option. He says, okay, look, I'll give you $300,000 if you leave the boat and the jet skis. Is that a win-win? Is everyone happy? Instead of bargaining and fighting over the price. That's what you have to take a look at, the big picture. You know, the famous story about the two children fighting over the orange. And the loving mother does what? One left, splits it in half. One girl peels it and eats it, and the other girl peels it, throws the orange away, and uses the peel for cooking. Kind of like the blue banana. Or the two hunters fighting over the deer. They both shot it at the same time. There's the deer. They both think they shot it. So what do we do? We split it in half. But then if you do some, you ask the questions, one wanted it for a trophy, the other one wanted it for the meat. You see where we're going? We're fighting over the wrong thing. So the lady wanted to sell her home and was asking way too much money. And everyone said, no, how about this? And they were fighting over the price. But somebody asked the question. They found the problem was she couldn't move for 6 months. She had no place to live, so she wasn't really that flexible. Well, knowing what the real problem was, it wasn't the price. She went down the price $25,000, and the person gave them a place to live for the next 6 months. That's actually happened twice. In the other verse, they actually let them stay in the house for the next 6 months, but they locked in the price. You see where we're going? This is a big piece to really understand. There was a vacant property that a gentleman was selling for $500,000, raw piece of land. Everyone was saying, no, it's worth $400, it's worth $400, it's worth $400. I'll give you $400. No. They were fighting over the position. Well, we talked to him. Well, what are you looking for? What's happening? What's going on? Where did you get $500,000? Well, he was 60, and he wanted to retire in 5 years, and that's the exact amount he needed to fund his retirement account to have just enough money. Is that powerful to know? And then we worked out a deal, talked to the student, and this is what happened. Say, okay, I will give you $500,000. And this is how it worked out. So was he happy? But here were the terms. Are the terms always negotiable? Yeah, if they want $1 million, that's fine. We'll pay $100 a month for the next 20,000 months. There's different ways to do it, but here's the solution. Okay, $100,000 now, and we'll give you a balloon payment of $400,000 in 5 years when you retire. And he was happy. He got what he wanted because they looked at the problem instead of the position. Now, was that a good deal to the person? Raw piece of land, 5 years, appreciation, developing the land, putting homes on the land. That was a very, very good deal. So does that make sense? That is a big piece in the negotiation process, is looking at the position versus the problem. Any questions on that? What are some things that you can take a look at? What could be the real problem when you're talking to people about foreclosure or other things? Pride? Embarrassment? Is that hard for a man, even a woman, especially a man? Well, what's going on when you lose your house? What's going through your brain? What's really happening? You're a failure. Failure as a provider. Failure to your family. A lot of emotions there. What else could be happening? They're scared. Fear. Everyone's trying to take advantage of them. So sitting down and find out, you know, little things. In a perfect world, what is the solution here? How can we help? Answering the questions, being sincere, goes a long way. Because rarely is the price the issue. There's so many other things you can add. Can you add the grand piano? Can you add insurance? Can you adjust the interest rate? Can you adjust the closing date? There's a lot of different things to find out exactly what people need and what people want. So this one's huge, the position versus the problem. So what I want to do is change the dynamics a little bit. Now, you negotiated with two people, and that was interesting, but what if you bring in a third party? Does that change the dynamics? And does that happen quite a bit? Now, here's a big thing I really want you to understand. When you deal with lawyers, when you deal with real estate brokers, they almost hurt the deal because they're always trying to prove their worth. They're getting a piece of the action. You're getting close to make a deal. Have you seen this happen? And they come up with something stupid. You see this happen? You're shaking your hand. It happens all the time. Because they're trying to prove their worth. Now remember, you're paying them and you have the ability to say what? Shut up, you're fired, don't say anything. Let me do this. That's why they don't want you to meet sometimes with the other party, because they want to prove their worth, prove their commission, whatever it is. So very, very important you understand that. You deal with lawyers especially, any type of broker, real estate agent, sometimes they'll throw a wrench in just to prove their worth. That changes things. So this time we want to do groups of three. Don't make anything up. It's a pretty simple exercise. And remember that altruism necessarily doesn't happen in the real world. Let's see if you can come up with a solution. So let's hand out the third party exercises. Now get in groups of three, someone you haven't negotiated with yet. And where are you going to negotiate this one at? All right. Let's talk about this. Come back to your seats. Did anybody else come to an agreement? Or are we at an impasse? You guys, I have your numbers. Come bring me your numbers, Matt. Come grab a seat. Let's talk about this. Have a little debrief. All right. You guys ready for the results? Now, is it possible to negotiate too fast, too slow? Is that pretty intense? Now, these numbers were carefully chosen. Did you guys realize that any two players could screw the other one? And that happened, didn't it? Let's look at the numbers.